Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves Fan 4-Packs. A fantastic way to enjoy a Chicago Wolves hockey. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, one large popcorn, and one low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. They are winners. They are the Wolves. Joe Sheehan joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from at Alpamonte Ford. He is on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. He of Sports Illustrated and Baseball America. And Joe, we were just playing a little politics of glory game with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame instead of the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's just as stupid.
Something above replacement
guitarist. Right. Or
mix above replacement.
No, where they were on the charts or sales levels. I mean, there's the same kind of metrics, I guess, figuring out if they deserve it. Same stupidity. Well, we are seeing a Cardinals team that all of a sudden can't hit. Obviously,
that's a shame.
They're going up against some terrific pitching, but this is pretty extreme to see it happen like this. What are we seeing?
You're seeing the Nationals get to reduce their pitching staff to just their good pitchers. After last night, they've used Strasburg and Scherzer for 42 of 81 innings after last night. That's more than half of their playoff innings have been pitched by two guys. Now, the Cardinals, they were basically an average minus offense, a bit below average, but they had no offensive identity. If you look at their numbers, the only thing they rated even above average in was drawing walks, which is fine. I mean, that's something you want to be able to do. But very little power, didn't hit for extra base hits, didn't hit for average. They steal bases, but in today's game, you really can't build an offense out of stolen bases. It's not a particularly good offense, and it's been really, shut down by good pitching. And if you look back at that Braves series, guys, they won their games awfully randomly. I mean, they were down 3-1 in game one. They scored 6 runs in 2 innings out of nowhere. They were down 4-3 in game four. They kind of assembled runs in the 8th and the 10th. And then they had that 10-run outburst, which still... The Braves have to be looking at this series and going, how the heck do we lose to this team? The Nationals are just a better team.
Does Steven Strasburg... I mean, he's been fantastic. And he's got himself an opt-out after this season. Does his performance in the playoffs in any way, or usage... impact his ability or willingness to perhaps opt out?
I'm not sure what you mean by usage.
He's been out there a lot. And I would imagine, like you say, if they're going to reduce his the number of pitchers they're using, I would imagine they're willing to use him out of the bullpen when they need to again.
I don't think that's going to affect his willingness to opt out. If anything, I think it might make him more attractive on the market because it adds to the perception. Remember, I mean, Strasburg fairly recently had a reputation as kind of a delicate flower. I've said it myself when we've talked about using him on short rest. There was that controversy in the Cubs series. What was that, guys? 2 years ago? Where he was sick and he couldn't make the start, and then it was rained out, and he ended up starting anyway. There was a really good discussion on the Newsletter Slack channel last night about this, about, 4-100, will he opt out of that? I think he can do better than that. Cole will obviously be the big name on the market. But you look at Strasburg as somebody who, for his career, has basically been a 2, but now all of a sudden he looks a little bit like a number 1. And if we're using the Nerf balls next year, who knows what his numbers could be. So, I think that opting out is the move for him, even if it just is the CC Sabathia, Justin Upton opt-out, where you exercise the option to opt out, if only to give yourself an extension on your current deal.
Yeah.
So he might opt out for 12 hours. And then end up back with the Nationals, on 6-150 instead of 4-100. But I would be surprised if he declines the option entirely.
You mentioned the Nerf balls, and I'm wondering, is this the Joe Sheehan sort of allegory of the next ship coming in, the next pallet off the next ship, and the unknown? Is that all this is, or is there skullduggery afoot?
I don't know. And you won't find a whole lot of people saying they don't know. This is the fight I had two nights ago, I think, online, where I'm basically saying, look, we know the balls are different. Rob Arthur's work at Prospectus last week pretty much ended any conversation about whether the playoff balls were different than the regular season balls, and I encourage people to check that out. I believe Prospectus posted that free, so go to Baseball Prospectus, look up Rob Arthur's article on the baseballs. I guess I just don't believe in MLB enough to think that they could arrange this. Baseball has basically always been surprised when the baseballs have changed. There's never been a moment where they've been like, we're going to make the balls X this year, and they've made the balls X. So I just really find it hard to believe that they, when everybody was would be looking, decided, yes, we're going to, for the first time ever, intentionally put a different ball in play. I shouldn't say for the first time ever. In 1920, they put a different ball in play. But I really would be surprised if this was a positive action by MLB. And you make the argument, like, it's really not great for Major League Baseball to have such little control about over the baseball. But that's a whole different discussion. But I until a lot of evidence comes forward, I have a hard time believing this is positive action by MLB, because they've never done it before, and I don't think they're competent enough to do it.
Outside the playoffs, the Cubs have a couple of things going on. They're set to interview Gabe Kapler, according to reports, and they have already interviewed Joe Espada, the bench coach of the Houston Astros. What do you make of those two guys interviewing for Joe Maddon's old job?
I think both fit the new model of manager, right? You get a guy who's going to be part of the management team. Not that he's going to take direction from the front office and the quants, but he's going to work with the front office and the quants. You'd also hope that he's somebody who can relate to younger players, is good with younger players. There were some, you know, in Philadelphia after 2018, there were some questions about Kapler's ability to manage the clubhouse. Not so much that he didn't get along with players, he just kind of let them run their own show. Maybe that's what the Cubs need after Joe Maddon. Somebody who's maybe a little bit less a less strong personality. Espada would be interesting. He's never had the job before. I think your model there is, it's interesting because the model of guys who've gotten jobs without managerial experience tend to be ex-players. And Espada, of course, if he had a major league career, it was a very short one.
No, he didn't.
There's not a lot, you know, recent models for guys like that. But again, if you're looking for somebody who's going to be part of a team as opposed to somebody who's going to kind of be his own guy, I mean, there's been some talk about the Phillies looking at Dusty Baker or Buck Showalter. That's an entirely different model of manager. I think the Cubs going out and getting somebody who's less a strong personality than Maddon probably fits what they need right now.
Something's been happening in these playoffs, and it's now gotten to the point where I'm pretty sure it has to be happening. It's sort of the eye test that the well-worn viewer sensibilities that we have from years and years and years of watching center field camera-based television production, ball off the bat, you know if it's a base hit or not. Mm-hmm. You know by the angle. You understand it. Yet, when the director then switches to the other camera, it's an out because there's a guy there, and it's taken a lot of time to understand that shot that just gets right past the pitcher, sometimes the shortstop is just there because he's supposed to be there. And all of these teams that I've seen, and obviously in these league championship series, they're doing a really good job with defensive positioning, it seems to me.
It's everywhere, but I think it was really noticeable in that Yankees-Twins series. It felt like the Twins hit a lot of balls. We're like, okay, they're going to get back in this game. Nope, Didi Gregorius is there. Nope, Aaron Judge is there. The Yankees' positioning has been unbelievable in the postseason. And it really came up in that first game against the Astros as well. It's data-driven positioning. Everybody calls it shifting. I don't like shifting because it implies that there's a standard that should be met that is now being violated. I just like calling it putting the guys where the ball's being hit, data-driven positioning. And it's really made it hard to get any kind of hit. Infields are impenetrable at this point because you have the best athletes in baseball history, and now they know where the ball is going to be hit, so they're standing pretty much where they need to be. It's really kind of a small way in which the game has just evolved. We talk a lot about the pitching and the power and those things, but the combination of data and athletes has turned balls in play into, you know, a nightmare for hitters. It's you're right. You think about it, that cut. You see a ball off the bat, and you go, that's a hit. You know, 50 years of watching baseball, 12 for you, Connor, has taught us that this is the way the game is played. And it's really something. And it's funny too, because if the ball is hit, you know, in what used to be the 5-6 hole, the Tony Gwynn hole,
yeah,
and a guy makes a play, somebody will say, ah, yeah, or should say, if the ball's hit up the where second baseman normally would be, the announcer will go, ah, he beat the shift. But if the ball's hit behind the second base bag, they never say, ah, yeah, I'm screwing up my analogy here. My question, my point is, you hear they beat the shift, but you never hear, ah, they beat the conventional defense. So, I like it. I like the fact this is one of the most obvious manifestations of data in the game today.
Yeah, I think about it. In other sports, it's completely cool and respected and sportsmanlike to position your defense where you think the opponent is going to be or go, and you do the same thing in baseball, and you're somehow in violation of something.
Can you imagine if on, like, you know, fourth and goal, you had a rule that said a team could only have four down linemen?
Right, or you need to have two deep safeties in the back of the end zone. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not allowed to force a guy to go left when he's left-handed, that kind of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, and this is what people want to do in baseball. It's like, look, this is you put your defenders where the ball is going to go. This is a fairly basic principle of sports.
Joe, I'd hoped that Braves-Nationals series ended in a way other than just an absolute shellacking. So we kind of got robbed a little bit, I think, from a nice little deciding game there. But we were having a conversation off the air before our NFL Monday. If you were starting a team right now and your choice between the first guy that you're starting a team around is Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna, who are you taking?
There's a pretty massive difference defensively, both in terms of performance and positional value. I give up the year, and I give up, you know, the possibility that Soto is Ted Williams, but I probably take Acuna, just because that's you just start with a baseline of like a win and a half to 2 wins difference on defense and pitch and positioning a year. But it's a tough call because Soto, there's a chance that Soto is like that guy, and Acuna probably has an offensive ceiling. But I'm still probably going to take Acuna. That's a great hot stove league discussion.
If you are a team trying to learn a lesson from who's good here, you know, we always tend to extrapolate when we're down to the last team standing. We always do this time of year in any sport and say, well, here's how they did it, therefore this is how we're going to do it. What is a team going to do wrong? What conclusion are they going to draw from what we're seeing right now that is going to have them down a rabbit hole where they shouldn't be?
There's a lot of talk right now about how starting pitching has returned in the playoffs. Teams are using their starters more than they have in recent years, and that's largely a function of the teams that made the playoffs. If Josh Hader strikes out Juan Soto and the Brewers advance instead of the Nationals, we're having a totally different discussion because the Nationals and their starters don't advance, and the Brewers and their bullpen-heavy team do. So it's really just a function of personnel. We also can't yet tell. I think a lot of the starters working deeper is the Nerf ball, because in previous seasons, you'd have two or three home runs that end up knocking a pitcher out of the game that don't exist this year. So I would be very careful about deciding that starting pitching is back and we need to build around a rotation, because I don't know what the baseball is anymore.
Are you cool with Aaron Boone's reputation? Well, I shouldn't say reputation, but his place in the hierarchy of baseball managers being reshaped this entire season long and also in this postseason, is that a good thing for... I think maybe it might be a good thing for baseball to have the Yankees in a place other than I just hate them. I don't know how much goodwill they can engender with a whole bunch of guys not named Aaron Judge playing all season long, but maybe that's something that exists for them?
Well, Boone is somebody I've kind of flipped on a little bit. I didn't love his rookie season, and he won a bunch of games because he's got a lot of talent. And I think the work he did this year, kind of learning from some of last year's mistakes, managing around all of those injuries. I want to say I had him second in manager of the year ballot behind Rocco Baldelli. And I think that, yeah, his changing, this has actually worked. And I'm surprised. I don't like the let's get a guy who's never managed before, pull him out of the TV booth, and make him our manager. I really hate that model. But Boone has, you know, certainly been a success for that model. As far as the Yankees, you can't build a Yankee team that's going to make them popular nationally. The pinstripes, the logo, the payroll are immediately going to turn off 65% of baseball fans. The 2017 Yankees were as likable a group as you could put together. It was that Judge rookie year. It was Severino's rookie year. It was a younger team where the payroll was high, But the production was all coming from these young players. They had Didi Gregorius, who's an incredibly likable player, incredibly likable person. And you've got still a lot of those same guys now. It's just I don't think you're ever going to get people past the evil empire. You know, rooting for the Yankees is like rooting for U.S. Steel.
Yeah.
That image. It's just it's never going to change, which is fine. I mean, it's just it's part and parcel. You root for a team with 28 champions or 28 championships. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. I think baseball's best when it has a mix. When you have fun underdogs, which we really don't have. The Nationals, Cardinals, Yankees, and Astros, there's not really an underdog in that mix. But when you have great teams that people can kind of get riled up about, and then you have the plucky underdogs that can take their shots. I think the Braves advancing to the World Series against the Yankees or Astros probably would have been the best narrative for baseball because you would have had both sides of that. And, of course, that didn't happen. The Nationals aren't an underdog. The Nationals had a $170 million payroll, and they've got a core with like a couple of Hall of Famers and a couple of Hall of Very Good guys. They're a legitimately great team.
So, Joe, since you mentioned that you're not a huge fan of plucking someone, a former player, out of the broadcast booth who's never managed before and installing him as the next manager, if the Cubs hired David Ross, which kind of is feeling like how it's going to go, can you see your way to liking that hire, or is that just going to preclude you from liking what they might end up doing?
I think you're taking a risk. I think that it could go the way of Boone, or it could go the way of, you know, Ventura and Matheny, where...
Don't say Matheny.
That's probably an unfair comparison because the front office in Chicago is not going to hire somebody who's that far
afield
from what they want.
Idiot! They're not going to hire an idiot.
But no, I think you're taking a risk there. I think that I'd rather have somebody who's got some dugout experience, some whether you know maybe it's minor league managing experience, maybe it's being a bench coach. But that's the way I would go. And if the organization desires that they value what Ross brings in the clubhouse and they feel like they can make him do the rest of the stuff, make it from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., they can give him enough support that what he does the rest of the day provides a ton of value and that's what they want. That's the model. And like I say, it's worked in New York. And I can't anymore say that this is never going to work because you do have an example of it working in New York. But generally speaking, the model I think I love the best right now, guys, is the Terry Francona, A.J. Hinch model, where you get a guy who his first job didn't work out, but he at least got the experience managing and he knows what it was like. And now you're going to take him and his openness to new ideas, like Francona, you know, Epstein hiring Francona in Boston, I'm talking about.
That could be Kapler.
See, when you skip to the end, Dan, it really kind of kills my whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's the Kapler model. And the idea of the Cubs hiring Kapler has a lot of the things I like about getting a guy. I think Kapler's a guy who in his second job could turn out to be a really good manager.
Joe, thanks, man.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, fellas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.